Vajradhaka and I were talking the other day, and we both remembered, I think it was the first Kefold's retreat that I was on. There was a question and answer session. And in the midst of this questions and answers, somebody asked, "Bhante, could you say something about Mahamudra?" So Bhante said two things, as I remember it. I can't get them word for word by any means. He said, first of all, "Couldn't you just wait and see what happened? Did you have to sort of ask? Couldn't you just let it happen?" And it was quite direct, actually. And then he said, "You know, and if I talk about it here, well, it's just going to be words. It's just going to be intellectual. People are going to take it up in a merely intellectual way and think that they know what I'm talking about." So I think that's been the basis of Bhante's approach, that these experiences are experiences, and they are, unfold naturally and spontaneously, and if they're talked about too much, you can end up thinking you've got them. Yet, Bhante at Tuscany and elsewhere, as I've already indicated, lived and spoke in a way that induced a sense of that immediacy of reality, at least to me. I can't put it any more finely than that. This was for me a quite definite quality of consciousness that I can only say I felt he transmitted to me and others. It's the basis, certainly, of my great confidence and faith in him, and that remains unchanged. He showed me something that, if I haven't lived up to it, I've not lost. Through his communication, I had a glimpse of an experience that is with me and is the basis for my spiritual life. So I believe that Bhante's embodied all three approaches in not so much in terms of doctrine, although there has been some doctrinal representation of this third perspective, but more in terms of his approach and attitude. And he's quite consciously reserved, talking about things in this self-discovery way for the reasons given. I believe Bhante's also embodied these three approaches or moods in the system of meditation. Integration and positive emotion clearly belong to the myth of self-development. Spiritual death and rebirth belong to the myth of self-surrender. When he talks of just sitting, he's talking, it seems to me, of the myth of self-discovery. And I believe this hasn't been this has been widely misunderstood, largely because of Bhante's minimalist discourse about it. But I think that we're probably old enough nowadays to think and talk about these things a bit more explicitly. He says, when he talks about just sitting, that after the application of each technique, you just sit with its effects. You allow them to echo away within you. You allow the experience to resonate within you in a natural and spontaneous way. So you do this at each stage. After the mindfulness of breathing, you do this. You let it resonate within you, and so on. So without any ideas about one being already the Buddha or any sort of sophisticated poetic metaphysics, he encourages us at each level to develop something to develop something through effort, and then allow what we've developed to spontaneously resonate within us. Once you're doing this at the level of spiritual death and of rebirth, you're entering the territory of Mahamudra and Dzogchen, etc. At this point, those ways of looking at things become directly relevant as descriptions of your experience, not just ideas about your experience. You are further unfolding something that is naturally emerging in your experience. The path of self-discovery truly begins at the point of the path of vision, and it needs some vision to work with, some vision that you allow to manifest. Though the attitude can be cultivated much earlier, where you allow your experience to spontaneously resonate. Until that point, the myths of self-development and of self-surrender are vital to one's spiritual health. This is emphasized very much in the tradition. I was just reading Xuan Tsang's commentary on the Vasubandhu's 30 verses, and he talks about the need at the beginning of spiritual life, that is in the stages of Sila and samadhi as samatha for will, even though will is actually illusory. If you don't use will, you won't move forward. So you lose use something that you know, at least theoretically, is illusory in order to move yourself to the point at which you see directly that it's illusory. If you don't do that, you won't get there. So it seems important to me that we maintain or use our will and our idea of an ideal to serve and to surrender to until the decisive emergence of an experience of what transcends will. Now, I just want to stress I'm not at all questioning the developments that have been taking place. I'm simply trying to give them a context. By this time, if something is decisively emerging in your experience, there really ceases to be a question of which myth to travel by. Developing, surrendering, discovering are all fulfilled and transcended. One needs no view. There has ceased to be any dichotomy between me and the Buddha. And this, I try to remember in my own practice, at the best moments of that practice. All views are relative and partial perspectives on life, helpful at certain stages with their own delusions and dangers. But they are necessary at certain stages. But they're relative and partial perspectives on life. They are, in the end, methodological rather than philosophical or doctrinal. All doctrine, in Bhante's phrase, is doctrine for method's sake. Ultimately, all doctrine is to be transcended. Until that transcendence has taken place fully and finally, until the end of this process, I feel the need myself to use the views of self-development and of surrender, balanced by the view of self-discovery. In that way, I believe I will close the gap between me and the Buddha, even though that gap, in the end, is just a gap in my mind.